open the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. Three bills up, and we'll do 623 first, then 949, and then Senate Bill 514 last. Open a work session on Senate Bill 623.
Mr.
Chair. Senator Monroe, we have a dash one amendment.
I will move the dash one amendment.
Senator Monroe's moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 623. Discussion. Objections. So order.
Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Move Senate Bill 623 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, and let the record show that Senator Monroe just stirred his coffee with a pen, an ink pen, to make sugar
the
in
the back it. End of it, not the front end.
I want that part of the record as he made his motion. Haven't seen that one before. Senator Monroe's move 623 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
This is classic half a loaf in that most of these homes are probably valued at somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000. But it's a very good start, and I appreciate the chair's willingness to move this bill.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Any objections to that motion? Bill passes. Senator Monroe?
You have been carrier.
Be the carrier of the bill.
As long as Senator George will help me.
It is a half loaf, yeah, but I agree with you.
Senator George?
A co-carrier? No, so we don't need a co-carrier.
No, a co-carrier. No.
Okay, open a... Do we need to do a public hearing on 949? So we'll, we had it in another committee. Is she next door? Okay, so let's grab her. And do a public hearing on Senate Bill 949. And this goes to Ways and Means, correct, Mazin?
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 949, as you mentioned, goes to the Ways and Means after the Finance and Revenue, and before that it came from the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. And what the bill is attempting to do is put a $2 million funding for feasibility studies for the ethanol viability project, and those $2 million are to come from bonds on the lottery revenue. So, but I think the amount of the $2 million for the bond, as we check with the bonding process of the state treasurer, this probably will not be a bond on its own, but it will be a bundle or bundled within a whole crop of bonds that the state treasurer puts together to make up something like $50 million or so before they go to the market for bonding. And the process then becomes for applications of different firms to ask for these grants to do their studies. And in general, Mr. Chair, the $2 million with payments on a 20-year bond, if it's within a bundle, will be approximately $222,000 a year, or $444,000
biennially. Questions for Mazin? Senator Lori Montes Anderson, Hiroshi Morihara, and is it Martha Desmond?
Martin
Desmond. Sorry, Mr. Desmond. If you'd like to join them, you're welcome. If you don't, you're welcome to do that. Good morning.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee, for hearing this bill. I'm Senator Lori Montes Anderson from the Greshamwood Village, Fairview, and Troutdale area. I am very excited about Senate Bill 949. Oregon businesses truly need the opportunity to capitalize on innovative, renewable technologies, and I'm sure you're very aware of that, such as the commercial ethanol plants, in order to participate in this booming renewable energy business clusters that are gaining momentum right and left in other states, and we need to make sure that we have a lucrative, environmentally sustainable industry here in Oregon, and Senate Bill 941 addresses one of the issues. Producing cellulosic ethanol is really a cutting-edge technology with an energy potential 3 times greater than actually corn ethanol. And I know we're getting into corn ethanol here, also in the state of Oregon. It has a proven environmental record of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 85% over regularly formulated gasoline, and that in comparison to corn ethanol only reduces greenhouse gas emissions by 18 to 29%. Cellulosic ethanol, it's unlike ethanol made from sugar and starch, it's made mostly from plant waste, and that includes trees. And therefore, using cellulosic ethanol would eliminate price competition with food products. If you've been reading the newspapers, even Mexico, there's such big business in corn now that it's hard for some even to get their food products, like tortillas. That's what I read in the paper. We are known for growing trees. Oregon is known for trees. And it would be wonderful if we could bring back our logging industry, and this is a way to do it. The problem under the current production state, Oregon's cellulosic ethanol companies will not have the chance to develop because at lender and equity investors have found demonstration plants too small to be commercially viable. And that's why we're coming before the legislature today. Senate Bill 949 will allow the State Department of Energy to issue lottery bonds to support starting a viable and competitive cellulosic ethanol market in Oregon. I've already talked about investing in Oregon logging and farming, and I feel that this will do that. And Oregon entrepreneurs can build a thriving ethanol industry in Oregon, and I just am more than excited about this bill and would hopefully ask you to move this bill on. Thank you.
Okay. I think I can go home now. She did such a great job. My name is Hiroshi Morihara. I'm the chair of Oregon Science and Technology Partnership. And as Senator Anderson said, this cellulosic ethanol is the most environmentally friendly fuel available today. And there's a strong federal mandate to increase the usage of ethanol by 20% in the next 10 years. That means about 40 billion gallons of ethanol got to be produced. And currently, we produce about 5 billion gallons from corn. So we have a long way to go to reach the federal mandate of 20%. And most experts agree that the corn ethanol is not the future, but the cellulosic ethanol is the future of ethanol. And Oregon has a fantastic opportunity to become the center of cellulosic ethanol in the U.S. And the reason is that we have tremendous amount of feedstock to produce cellulosic ethanol, such as farmed poplar trees. And the paper industry is declining, so the tree farms are looking for a new market. And this is a great way of diverting that farm product into useful product. And we have wheat straws, we have grass, and also timber harvested through the Healthy Forest Initiative to prevent the catastrophic fire. So we have tremendous amount of raw material available. And this process is becoming mature, as evidenced by U.S. DOE funding $385 million grant in February to six companies to produce sulfuric ethanol plant, and most of them are either wheat straws or switchgrass or other materials and not trees. But the fact that the U.S. DOE is granting such a large amount indicates that, that it is becoming a mature industry. And none of the Oregon companies are nowhere near qualifying to receive a U.S. DOE grant, not because of the of lack of knowledge, but because Oregon companies do not have the demonstration plan to demonstrate that, that this process is economically viable using Oregon raw materials. So what we need is to design and build a demonstration plant to prove that, that this process is viable economically, so that we can get funding from not only U.S. DOE, but from banks, venture capital, and private investors. And I think we have a tremendous opportunity to use small funding from the state and make this business into a multi-billion dollar business in Oregon. So I strongly request that you support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marahar. Questions? Mr. Desmond.
Chairman Deckert, distinguished senators, my name is Martin Desmond. I'm just here testifying on behalf of myself. A couple of weeks ago, I attended a biofuels symposium at Oregon State University and had a fellow from the Oregon Department of Energy talk that Oregonians spend approximately $10.5 billion on energy needs annually, and he estimated about half of that was spent for fuel transportation needs. And so when you do some calculations, he roughly estimated that about 70 or 85% of our transportation fuel needs, because you were obviously purchasing oil from other parts of the world, that 85% of those funds immediately leave the state of leave our state, you know, which amounts to about $12 million a day. I assume you have my testimony up there, and I have a picture of the sequential biofuels prices that they had. This is actually taken about 2 weeks ago, and since then the prices have gone up, though. But one of the things I sort of found interesting is that ethanol, which used to be, or 10% biodiesel or bioethanol, which, you know, used to be less than 85% ethanol, that those figures have actually changed quite a bit. And most recently it was like $3.29 for 10% ethanol, while 85% ethanol was still $2.69. I happen to be a member of the Oregon Department of Forestry's forest biomass working group, but as I mentioned, I'm just testifying on my just for my own personal self. This working group was established by the Oregon State Legislature in 2005 to look at the serious problems that we have with forest biomass, both on our public and private forest lands. According to a 2005 study by the Forest Service, Oregon has more forest lands at moderate to high risk than any other state in the country. We have about 16 million acres of forest land that do need to be treated to reduce wildfires. And as you're all aware, you know, back in 2002, we had the Biscuit Fire that burned 500,000 acres. That cost about $150 million to suppress. In 2003, we had the B&B Fire up on the crest that burned about 92,000 acres. In fact, what's interesting is if you drive up to Santa Ana Pass, get out of your car, you can actually see where three major fires have burned in the last 5 years, right up there at the pass. The Nature Conservancy is calling for treatment of about 1 to 1.2 million acres per year for the next 20 to 25 years. And so Oregon has more softwood volume than any other state in the country. And so Senator Anderson was talking about our forest biomass, and we really have a tremendous potential to both simultaneously reduce our fire danger and to generate our own fuel here in this state. And one of the terms I heard Hiroshi at a meeting about 7 or 8 months ago, it was the Valley of Death Walk, and I thought that's a really great walk. That's a really great term, because one of the problems is that when you first start up a business, I happen to teach business classes myself, is when you first start up a business, it's typically going to take like a year or two before you're actually going to be generating enough income to pay for all your expenses. And so that's where the industry really is right now, is that, you know, it needs this inflow both of public funds as well as some private investor funds to do these necessary studies to get these facilities started to be built. One thing I might note is I've just done some private calculations myself, doing a 20-year discounted cash flow using a 10% discount rate. And these projects for like a 2 million gallon cellulosic ethanol demonstration facility show an internal rate of return of over 20%. A couple of the recommendations that came out of our forest biomass group is that the state adopt a number of cellulosic ethanol goals. For example, for like 2008, 5 million gallons, and what we're looking at is just one or two demonstration facilities. For 2010, 25 million gallons, 2012, 65 million gallons. So that's one of the recommendations of our forest working group. We also recommended trying to attract $100 million in venture capital funds to get this industry going. So in closing, I'd like to encourage the members of the Finance and Revenue Committee to support and pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the panel? Minister.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the testimony very much. And Mr. Desmond, can you used to speak with a lot of knowledge and experience. Could you just fill us in on kind of what your background is? You're on these other working groups, but can you give me a better complete picture of your expertise as it relates to this issue?
Well, I guess about 25 years ago, I used to work for the Oregon Wilderness Coalition, and we used to work to pass wilderness legislation. And then over the years, I've worked on a number of different issues. I used to work for the Forest Service, and I've been particularly concerned about our forests for a very, very long time, both in terms of the amount of extraction that used to occur with them, because, you know, there was obviously too much old growth cutting. But then now, in the last 10 years, I've been much more concerned about too many small trees growing on particularly our public forest lands, and that there's a need to reduce the fuel load on those lands, because, we all know, or at least a fair number of us know about what the problems that we're facing here as we go forward, with wildfire potential. So that's a little bit of my background.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Desmond, as I read your testimony, I'm struck by the numbers here, quite honestly. 20% rate of return is a pretty healthy rate of return.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the challenges to fund startups.
Mm-hmm.
Having been involved and continue to be involved in startups, yet you're coming to the legislature asking for a couple million dollars when your group, talks about attracting $100 million of VC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned about the legislature, the state, kind of picking winners and losers.
Mm-hmm.
In this whole process, I'm working with startup companies, and it would be great to come to the legislature and get the legislature to help cut us a check for a couple million dollars so
mm-hmm.
we get through that valley of death, so we don't have to mm-hmm. work so hard to go out and convince mm-hmm. investors that our product, our process is going to make a significant return on their dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why why we as state legislators and why this legislature should spend $2 million when, from the information you provide me, it's awfully attractive investment if I'm going to get 20% return on an investment in a cellulosic ethanol plant.
Chairman Dickert, Senator Starr, I guess 2 points. Hiroshi and I were at Biofuels Development Conference up in Portland a week ago. There's about 350 folks there. A lot of folks are definitely really interested in that, though, but when you actually look at, you know, who's actually putting out the money right now, I mean, Hiroshi can correct me, but I don't really know of anybody that's actually putting out the money. What do I do? There's a couple of very small cellulosic ethanol companies. You know, they're just sort of barely getting started. But, you know, one of the things, I would just look at the dollars and the cents, and roughly about $12 million is flowing out of the state every day for our fuel needs. And so... So from my point of view, the state legislature, I've actually made this point in some of our biomass working groups, is that the state legislature should actually come up with $100 million because, you know, we spend a tremendous amount of money on our fuel needs, and that by spending a couple million dollars now to help jumpstart this industry, we're going to keep the money, you know, we're going to build an industry here in this state, so we're generating our own fuel, and we're going to reduce the amount of money that's be flowing out of the state. So that's why I would say that it's not so much that the state legislature is necessarily picking winners, though, but it's really in our best interest to really get this industry going. Thank you.
May I answer?
Yeah. Please.
Senator Starr, I'm also, started up lots of small businesses. Also, I worked for big chemical companies, so I understand both sides of the aisle. And I have been in the R&D and the process development business for the last 40 years. And if you have a large chemical company such as DuPont or Cargill or other companies, $2 million is not a large amount. It's a great investment for them. Oregon does not have any large chemical companies. And Oregon does not have large companies who can afford to put up $2 million to build a demonstration plant. That's why I think it's more important for Oregon to have the financing from the state. In case of Midwest, you know, corn ethanol became very popular, farm cooperatives started building ethanol plants. And that was because on some years, they had so much corn, they had to throw away to keep the price up. So they decided, okay, in order to throw the corn away to keep the price up, we have to do something. And that the reason the ethanol industry was formed. We don't have that kind of situation right here. So in order to start ethanol business, you have to invest in the beginning in the process development. And you can do some lab tests, but to go to the next step require a large amount of investment. And I was talking with a person who is connected with CalSTRS, which is the California Teachers Retirement Fund. And they have a new committee within the fund to invest in the renewable energy businesses. But he said, in order for the CalSTRS to invest, we have to, you know, the business got to have a viable process demonstrated. And so we have to go from lab test to the demonstration stage. That's where the $2 million come from. And what could happen is that if the plant is demonstrated to be commercially viable, then this company can return that $2 million because that plant is very important for the future of the commercial plant because you have to keep on doing process improvements to be competitive. So this demonstration plant will be utilized throughout the life of that plant to do the process improvement and also testing different raw materials. Initially, you may use wood chips, but then later on, you may use municipal waste. So, you know, that plant will become really important, a test bed for the commercial plants. And that's the reason I think State of Oregon's investment is extremely important for the state, Oregon business to go to the next step.
And another comment. This is cutting edge technology. Canada has already has I don't know how many plants. They weren't really
one
willing to share their information with us because it is extremely competitive, and that's why I don't want Oregon to be lost in this market that everyone is trying to get on board with, and the fact that we're known for our cellulosic products would be a good reason why we really should be one of those cutting-edge technologies making it happen.
So, and that's actually the only question that I have, because I read Mr. Desmond's and I agree with Senator Starr, impressive, and Hiroshi, your testimony too, in the op-ed piece that you drafted for the Register Guard. I guess the only question that I have is that we've set up a pretty rigorous process. The governor's appointed, led by Dave Chen, a council that is supposed to vet so that we don't have proposals coming dealing with cutting-edge technologies and Valley of Death funding, and the governor included in his budget and the co-chairs have included in theirs an interim process that all proposals are supposed to go through, where many made the list and many didn't make, or some made the list and many didn't make the list. And I'm just, that's the only hesitation that I have, is that we've kind of put it out there that if you want in, you need to go through this process of the Oregon Inc. process. And that's the only concern I have, is that it really is our science and technology home for the state, and why we didn't put this proposal through that and try to get it on that Valley of Death list that is now getting funded just across the hall here.
Yes, I'm familiar with Oregon Inc. and $3 million they're requesting for the bioenergy initiative. And we have been talking about all biofuels, not just the cellulosic ethanol, maybe corn ethanol, biodiesel, or canola. And this one is very specific. And also they are talking about building a pilot plant at probably OSU, for example. And I think that plant will really help because, you know, in that plant, we can do process development to improve the processes. But what we are talking about here is trying to make this business commercialize as quickly as possible, not as an R&D project, but to make it into a business incubation. And R&D can be done within the Oregon Inc. biofuels pilot plant, but I think we are talking about time is running out because other states are a lot more active than we are, and we may, you know, be left behind if we don't act right now. So there's a difference between the emphasis of what this bill will do and what Oregon Inc. is planning for their money.
I would just encourage that we really did set that up as so that we didn't get many proposals coming. We really said if you've got a proposal that is around the innovation economy, this is the process through the interim that we'll use to vet those and let folks like Keith Larson, the head of Intel Capital, who is very conversant in these issues, help us judge what are good investments for the state and what are not as wise investments. And we did that purposefully to remove ourselves a little from that process. Senator George.
Thanks. Mr. Desmond, it almost appears as if you have gone through the same transition as Dr. Moore did, you know, one of the founders of Greenpeace, and all of a sudden came to the conclusion that management was really necessary, and I see Nature Conservancy mentioned here and them advocating management. But I would like to share with you guys, and then I'll get to a question in a second. We were in the Metolius just before one of the fires, and we were driving to the north and to the west. I've mentioned that even in this committee. The thing that I referred to was that was the Valley of Death. That was the Valley of Death. Everywhere we looked, dead, dying, infected trees. I'd never seen anything like it. It scared me half to death, and 3 weeks later was a massive fire that just almost took out Black Butte. The point of it is that I think this issue is so big. I mean, the quantities of biofuel that's out there, that it's worth making a major investment to see if, in fact, we can't do the conversion. Because this will be not only beneficial for energy production, but also, has anyone ever calculated, and I guess it'll be my first question if I'm allowed to go any further, anybody ever calculated the environmental impact of a massive forest fire with all the pollution that's relative to that burn? I mean, that's an unbelievable experience to watch. I've been near fires that were burning like that and practically sucked the oxygen out of your lungs if you were nearby the fire. And then all of that pollution, you know, being raised into the atmosphere. Any comments on this whole idea that I think we're at a crisis right now relative to our forest, and if this is one of the solutions, I couldn't do enough to help.
Oh, I agree, Senator George. What I've been told, I was told a little bit later that's probably not accurate, but this is what I was told, was is that the B&B fire that burned 92,000 acres in 2003 generated six times as much CO2 as all of us humans generated that year here in Oregon. So that whether it's exactly true or not, it obviously suggests as you're talking. And I'm sure Senator George, when you were out in the Metolius, you saw those test plots where the Forest Service had done those cuttings. And actually, what's interesting is the areas that where the Forest Service had removed the most smaller trees and just left the bigger trees, that those tended to be the most popular areas that people would like to see how the forest would look. But just one final point, and that's, you know, the environmental and the economic benefits. That's one of the things that we looked at with our forest biomass working group, and there's a couple studies that suggest that just simply reducing the fuel and fire loading has an environmental benefit and actually Joe Misek is back here, he can correct me, there's like two figures. One is a $600 benefit per acre. And then there's also another one of a $1,200 per acre benefit. And actually, the irony here is that the environmental benefits are actually greater than the economic benefits that you can sell that biomass for, say, running it through just a bioenergy facility at 6 cents. And that's one of the real problems we've struggled with. But I agree that we have a real crisis with our forests here.
A follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Also, in your testimony, you note $150 million in suppression cost. $2 million starts to sound pretty small against one series of fires that cost us $150 million to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've never seen any issue in which I thought there were so many winners as dealing with this issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the environmental, forest health, and energy production. The early results, the product coming out of the digester, is there any value in that? What does that look like when it comes out of the digester, the biomass, those forest waste products?
I guess I'm not quite understanding
okay.
your questions.
In the early research, you know, you take the forest biomass, you put it in the digester, and you're going to produce a product.
Uh-huh.
There's going to be something left over.
Yeah.
And what does that look like? I mean, like, for example, like with corn, you have a product that has other uses. And
yeah. What you're left with is, but biomass tends to consist of cellulose, hemicellulose, and lignin, and roughly 30, whatever. And so what you're left with after you release the sugars and ferment the ethanol out of that, you're left with about 30% of it being lignin. Actually, interesting with the lignin, what you can do is then in turn burn that in the facility to generate the heat and also the electricity. So
yeah, that's what I was headed for. You know,
yeah.
That's not going to be wasted either. We're going to get an
energy
source out of that.
Chairman, any questions?
No.
Thank you very much. Excellent testimony. Thank you for all the work you've done. Close public hearing, open work session on Senate Bill 949.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Move Senate Bill 949 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe has moved Senate Bill 949 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I guess it's almost sacrilege to be against anything that's going to help our economy or help our environment or Now we're moving like crazy on biofuels package. I think that's coming through. Is it coming through this committee?
It is. We have it.
There's tax credits up one side and down the other available for investments in this kind of effort, both at the state and federal level. I don't have enough information from the testimony today to. I don't know where the $2 million is going to go. I don't know whose pocket it's going to end up in. I'm very concerned about. Is the state going to own? I mean, are we going to have a percentage ownership in this new company that's going to return, 20% return? That's a pretty healthy returns. I'm involved, like I said, I'm involved with companies that are working their tails off trying to find $2 million from investors. And quite honestly, there's a lot of Oregonians that have deep pockets. I don't know. I'm going to oppose the motion. I understand that it's going to go to Ways and Means and wrestle with the other priorities down in that committee. But I don't have enough information here to support moving this bill forward.
Thank you. I made a commitment to the sponsor of the bill that we would get it down to Ways and Means and give it a chance to wrestle with all the other bills that are seeking funding and. But do appreciate the comments, Senator Starr. Other discussion. We have a motion, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Barbara, can you please call the roll?
Senator Britt.
Aye.
Senator George.
Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Senator Starr.
No.
Chair Deckard.
What's aye? The motion carries, and the bill is in the Ways and Means Committee. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 514. Good morning, Mary.
Senator Schrader is coming down.
Okay.
Speak this off of someone else for
Yeah, please.
Thank you. Senate Bill 514 establishes a property tax special assessment program for land subject to conservation easements. As background, this bill is almost identical to one that came through during the 2005 session. It allows land currently subject to farm and forest use special assessment to be transferred to a conservation special assessment without paying additional tax. The additional tax would be due because when you're switching out of one assessment to the other, you may have to pay the prior tax liabilities during the period that you had your special assessment. It permits the owner or other qualified person to withdraw an application within 30 days of applying for a change in classification from the conservation easement or the wildlife habitat easement. The new feature of this bill that was not in the former one is that it requires a $250 application fee for the conservation easement special assessment, and the fees are credited to the county's general fund, which is the specially assessed property, in which the specially assessed property is located. I checked with legislative council. There is no tax. This is a fee. And that's it.
Thank you. Questions for Mary? What is it, Coach Taylor? What's his name? Coach Carter. Coach Carter, please come up. And Bruce Taylor from Defenders of Wildlife.
Did you watch that movie, sir?
No, I just got this. The Senate President did not watch it all.
He never
plastic is still on.
So that's I'm expected to be abused by him, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate you hearing Senate Bill 514. Pretty simple bill. The staff, I think, outlined it pretty well. The goal here is, frankly, to have a no-cost to the state of Oregon or to local governments a way to encourage conservation easements. And since most of the land that we want to have conservation easements and retain for our environment are in farm forest areas, most of those... most of that ground already has some special assessment on it, and rather than have a farmer or a forester get penalized for switching from a farmer or a forest special assessment to a conservation easement assessment, this just provides a straightforward legal way for him or her to go from one to the other. So it's non-regulatory incentive to help out the environment, and as a farmer, I appreciate the opportunity to exercise my free will if I want to and not have, frankly, the government come down and tell me I have to do this or trees back 100 feet and all that stuff. So this is nice. This is, I think, a way to bring our country folk on board with some of our environmental concepts in a positive way.
Thank you. And I'm told that Coach Carter does not suffice for an introduction, so you have to...
Oh, excuse me. I'm also Senator Kurt Schrader from Senate District 20.
Questions for Senator Schrader. Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you for bringing this bill. This approach is very much in the spirit of Oregon's land use system. The reason for the changing the assessments on the land is because of speculation. It wants to discourage speculation. Or if land does change in zoning, for example, to an exception area, to recover some of the tax benefits that are intended for farm and forest. But a conservation easement is very much in the same category as farm and forest land, in my view, because it's a low-impact use of the land and hopefully will improve our environment. So thank you very much for bringing this back.
Thank you, Senator.
Other questions? Mr. Taylor.
Thank you. My name is Bruce Taylor with Defenders of Wildlife.
I leave, sir. I'm sorry.
Thank
sorry.
You, Senator Schrader.
Can we make him stay?
I think Senator Schrader really covered it pretty well. Just some of the background. Defenders of Wildlife has been working for a number of years, a lot with Senator Schrader, to try to improve conservation incentives for private landowners to do good things on private lands. And, in fact, it has been state policy since some 2001 legislation to say that we are not going to penalize people, impose additional taxes if they voluntarily choose to do conservation on their land. But in fact, we still have on the books a few anomalies in the tax code that make some landowners hesitant to put a conservation easement on their land because they fear they'll lose their special assessment, and beyond that, they're subject to penalties for back taxes. So as the Senator said, this is a fairly straightforward, it's not a short bill, but it's a simple bill just to create a new special assessment category specifically for conservation easements. Take care of that particular question. It is virtually identical to the bill that this committee passed, and thank you, in 2005, passed the full Senate, just got stalled at the end of the session the last time around. The one minor change is a couple-word change that some of the assessors were concerned about, so working with the Association of Counties, we have a very minor amendment to address that, but have worked closely with the Department of Revenue and our colleagues in the conservation community and the counties. I believe we have all those issues taken care of. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Questions for Mr. Taylor? You're aware of the dash ones?
Yes.
Corrective in nature. Mary, anything else on the dash ones before we...
The dash one that was given to us this morning is merely a necessary correction. It refers to the documents that the assessors will check off in order to approve the easement, and it just changes on page 2, lines 24. It currently refers to these to section 3 as being the area where you refer to what kind of documents you need, and it needs to be subsection 3 of section 4. And that was it.
Great. Any questions? Senator George.
Thanks. A person has some pasture ground. Let's say, for example, it's currently not being grazed. They would want to go ahead and say, let's put this in habitat or conservation plan. And then they decide they want to take it back out and put it in grapes. Where are they?
It would depend on the nature of the conservation easement. If they had a conservation easement, the terms of that easement, which are something that are worked out between the landowner and whoever holds the easement. So
yeah.
It would entirely depend on the nature of whatever they had agreed to.
Negotiated in.
Yeah. There is no standard set for them. Every conservation easement is tailored to the needs of the landowner and whoever holds the easement.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stark.
What is the... I assume that your organization negotiates these or holds these easements. Is that correct?
No, as a matter of fact, we don't. We got into this business back in 2001 with that original incentives package there, and this was one of the pieces that was recommended by a working group in 2003 that fell off the table at the end. And we have persisted with trying to get through this package of legislation, but the Defenders of Wildlife is a policy
oriented organization. Most of these easements are held by either government agencies or, more commonly, land trusts, local land trusts, a few national land trusts like the Trust for Public Land or the Nature Conservancy. But in most cases, it's either local governments or local land trusts.
Mr. Chair, so what happens with, take Senator George's example. You got pasture land that is negotiated into a conservation easement. What happens with that land? And is it accessible by the public, or what's?
There again, it depends on the terms of the specific easement. And most conservation easements do not deal with public access. Most landowners are not interested in providing public access. Certainly you can do that through a conservation easement, but that would have to be something that would be agreed to by the landowner. Most easements are focused on protecting the conservation values, so prohibiting subdivision, things like that.
Thanks.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Close public hearing on Senate Bill 514, open a work session on Senate Bill 514.
Thank you, Chair. I'll move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 514.
Senator Burdick moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 514. Discussion? Objections to that motion? Senator Burdick.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 514 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick moves Senate Bill 514 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections to that motion? Motion passes. Senator Schrader will carry his bill, and we can all vote no on one of his bills. And
not this one, Mr. Chair.
And we're adjourned until 8:45 tomorrow.